Recorded live in the Phantasmo Lounge, high atop the INS building in beautiful Midtown Portsmouth, Virginia, it's Phantasmo After Dark, with your host Rob Floyd and special guest host Inspector Craig Eckridge. Tonight's topic, Kolchak the Night Stalker. Hey, well, welcome back to the old podcast there, everybody. Special guest host tonight, Mr. Craig Eckridge from the mean streets of Seafield coming in.
Does that make me Mr. Inspector Craig Eckridge?
Mr. Inspector.
Okay, fair enough. I like that. Before we get started, announcements?
Announcements, yeah. We got the big Monster Fest convention coming up Saturday, October 3rd. The big one-day Monster Fest. But the coolest thing about it is that it is free and open to everybody. There is no admission. And got lots of cool stuff going on. I got panels all day long, lots of interesting stuff. You can learn something. I got Dr. Madblood's 40th anniversary this year we're celebrating, which is going to be awesome. Dr. Madblood, who, if you grew up in this area, he was your horror host, my horror host, brought you classic horror movies and cursed stinkers, and fostered our love for the genre.
The horror costume contest.
So, you know, hey, get your horror costumes together and come win some prizes. The Cemetery Boys are going to be playing all day long again. And our special, we're lucky enough to have scored this guest, Miss Veronica Carlson from the Hammer films. Dracula Has Risen from the Grave and Frankenstein Must Be Destroyed is going to be joining us. And she is a joy to be around. Just such a lovely lady. Gracious guest. And when are you going to get a chance to meet somebody from the classic Hammer films for free? Now, she will be selling her autographs and hopefully some of her art prints because she's an amazing artist.
Fantastic artist.
Yeah.
Fantastic artist.
Yeah. But there's no cost or admission just to get in to meet her. So come on out and join us, won't you?
Where is it, Rob?
Hey, glad you asked, Greg. It's at the Chesapeake Central Library on Cedar Road in Chesapeake, Virginia. Check out the Monster Fest website or the Monster Fest Facebook page for more info and updates. And that's that. So, tonight we're talking about Kolchak the Night Stalker, one of the greatest TV shows of the 70s, and pretty much
my favorite show ever.
Well, yeah, I mean, that goes without saying, you know. But before The X-Files, before Supernatural, before any of these shows like that, it was Kolchak the Night Stalker that set the tone, set the pace, and inspired most of these shows if you talk to the creators of them. The show was about the intrepid Carl Kolchak, a newspaper reporter for the, or not news, was it a newspaper?
Newspaper.
Yeah, newspaper. Independent News Service, the INS, Independent News Service. And he was just a schlub of a guy in his...
Well, a little bit of history. We got to back up first.
Oh, lay it on me.
Based on a novel by Jeff Rice, who unfortunately passed away in July, I believe.
Yeah.
The novel was very successful. In the novel, Kolchak is a reporter in Las Vegas.
That's right.
Las Vegas. And he's described in the books very differently. He's described as kind of like a broken-down ex-prize fighter type of guy who wore Hawaiian shirts.
Oh, wow.
Not the way he's portrayed in the show at all.
Yeah.
And the book was optioned for a TV movie.
Yeah.
At that time, before then, the highest-rated TV movie ever was Brian's Song.
Ooh.
With Billy Dee Williams and Jimmy Kahn about... about Brian Piccolo, the Chicago Bear who came down, I think it was cancer.
And malt liquor.
Melodrama.
Colt 45.
Billy D. The Night Stalker unseated that as the number one TV movie.
Oh, it wow. Became a sensation. I didn't know that.
It became overnight. Well, nobody thought it was going to do anything. He thought, we'll just throw it on there, stick it on, see what happens.
Yeah. Well, it was different, you know.
And it just hit.
Yeah.
After that, we get The Night Strangler.
Now wait a minute, back up now. The Night Stalker, what that was the one was the vampire.
That was the vampire.
Okay, it was the Vampire in Vegas.
The Vampire in Vegas.
Which would have been a great name for a show.
Dang, great album name too. So So Kolchak is the down and out reporter, starts following the story, figures out it's a vampire, of course, runs into
Nobody
City
believes
Hall,
him.
Nobody believes him, nobody wants to get to it. And if you're bringing up, if we're starting from the beginning, if we're going to talk about Kolchak, we got to talk about Tony Vincenzo.
Vincenzo!
His editor, portrayed by Simon Oakland.
The great Simon Oakland.
The great Simon Oakland. If you're not familiar with The Night Stalker, if you've seen the old Twilight Zone, mm-hmm. Simon Oakland is in the episode where the bandits put themselves in suspended animation with the gold.
Oh, yeah.
And they're stuck in the desert, and kind of Oakland's the leader of the bandits.
Yeah.
And he's telling the guys, oh, I've got water, but it's going to cost you a bar of gold and so forth. So if you remember that episode, that guy, that's Tony Vincenzo.
Well, he's one of those guys, too. It's that face. It's like, oh, that guy.
That guy.
You know, if you don't know his name, you see his face.
So you get the whole typical, it's not a vampire, there's no way.
Yeah.
Kolchak starts building his case. They have the big showdown. You get the classic scene with the riot the 70s cops with the white riot helmets.
Yes, sir.
You know, blasting away with the 38s and chasing the guy through yards, and he's just knocking them hither and yon all over the place. At the end, Kolchak handles his business, straighten things out. And his reward is he gets run out of town on a rail. Everything gets covered up. It never happened. He gets a one-way ticket to somewhere besides Vegas.
And they always have to cover it up. Like they don't want the general public to know that there's a vampire.
They can't know the truth.
Or a swamp monster or an Indian ghost or anything.
Or whatever
like that.
The case is, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like the Scooby Gang would have been like heroes, but Kolchak gets a one way ticket out of town.
Should have had a dog.
And when the camera pulls away at the end, you see in the passenger seat, they told Vincenzo to take a ride with Kolchak. So he gets bounced out of town.
I forgot about that.
And the other thing that's great about that movie is the sheriff is, of course, played by Claude Akins. And you can go back and pick people left and right in the show. This series and the TV movies were fantastic.
Loaded with guest stars. Anybody that was working in the 70s pretty much ended up on Kolchak or something at one point.
Or Columbo.
Not pretty much. Everybody ended up on Columbo. Sometimes twice or four times. But now the cool thing I like, interesting thing about between the two TV movies, like you said in the novel, Kolchak from the novel isn't recognizable as Kolchak from the TV show. But the character from the TV movie, even though he's different from the book, the first movie anyway, he's different in the first movie than he is in the second movie. The second movie, from what I remember, he's more like what we see in the TV show.
He is. Because you got to remember, in the first TV movie.
Yeah.
He's a regular guy that's never run into anything like that.
Yeah, but he's real stoic. He's got a girlfriend, and
he's got a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Or lady of the evening he visits sometimes. But the thing is what's great about the character, he's enough of a reporter.
Yeah.
To know that the facts are what they are, and the story is what it is.
Yeah.
And he's going to stick to it because Kolchak. Let's be honest. Throughout the TV movies and the series, not a lot of social graces.
No. He's a schlub. He doesn't have it together.
He doesn't have social graces, but he's not a jerk just to be a jerk.
No.
He's a jerk because he's got to get the store.
Well, and because it's, you know, the door's open for him to be. It's like, okay, you're making me say this to you.
Yes.
Somebody says something stupid to him, he just fires it right back. And it's so dry and so quick. The writing on the show was so sharp for that. The dialogue, especially between Kolchak and Vincenzo, the editor, it seems like it was all ad-libbed. I mean, it seems like two guys who've known each other, you know, picking on each other, quick fire back and forth.
Those two guys had a chemistry.
It doesn't
fantastic.
Seem scripted. It's so sharp and so tight and so dry and off the cuff sounding, you know, that the thing is, it's not a comedy show.
No, it's not.
It's not by any stretch of the imagination. It's a straightforward mystery show, but it's funny as hell in those parts, some of the dialogue between some of the characters.
It really is.
But getting back to the the two movies, real quick before we go into the show anymore. Like I said, the first movie, he's real kind of stoic and hard-nosed, and in the second movie, he's lighter. And more like the Kolchak that we see in the series, who's really a lighthearted guy. Just stuck, he gets into these intense situations. But in the second movie, you see, I think it opens up with Vincenzo
in
the bar. Yeah, you go ahead. You tell that one. Go ahead.
There's before we get into that, there's a moment, and I want to point out the brilliance of Simon Oakland, because he really fleshes his character out.
Yeah.
I think it's at the end of the first one. It's before Kolchak gets run out. He comes in. He's excited. He's got his story. He's bought Vincenzo around to say, we're going to print the story. Come hell or high water, the story's, we're going to print it.
Yeah.
Kolchak goes into the office, and the sheriff's there, and the DA's there, and... And Vincenzo just looks sick to his stomach. He looks sick to his stomach because he knows what's coming.
Yeah.
And basically, instead of getting lauded and the Pulitzer and all this other stuff, they come at him with, well, Kolchak, we all saw you pound a stake into a man's heart. You can leave town or we can go forth with the murder investigation. So that's how they get to sweep up.
Oh,
but
yeah.
There's a brilliant moment where you can see in the Vincenzo character where he came up as a reporter. And he's heartsick that the story's getting killed. He knows it's true, but there's a moment, and it's a genuinely touching moment. After Kolchak gets screwed, Tony looks at him and says, "You're one hell of a reporter." And in that moment, you can see it,
the mutual respect,
the
between
mutual
the guys.
Respect in that relationship.
Man, I gotta watch that again. It's been too long.
So at the end, they're leaving, and then it was so successful, we get the Night Strangler, which has one of my favorite openings of all time.
Yeah.
It opens up, and at first you just see Tony sitting at a bar.
All by himself.
All by
minding
himself.
Minding his own damn business.
Having a good time. He gets a drink.
And then he hears.
And slowly from the back, you start fading in. It was a vampire! And his face just collapses inward.
He just sinks. His
it
whole
just
body.
Sinks.
Like,
and you
no,
see him kind
no,
of turn
no,
his head and
no,
listen.
No.
And he lets go with this... Oh, no. And it's just a great moment.
And he has the bartender. Somebody says, hey, is there a guy around the corner that looks like he's, what, a refugee?
Just came in from a roadshow production of the front page.
And the guy's like, yep. He's like, oh. He's just sick to his stomach. And then when he rounds the corner.
And when he rounds the
and
corner.
And Kolchak sees him, he says.
Kolchak's like, Vincenzo!
He's so happy to see
and
him.
And Vincenzo's response is, hi, Carl.
And he's stuck with him again.
And he's stuck with him. But the beauty part is that he knows that Kolchak's such a good reporter.
Yeah.
We're now in Seattle. And Vincenzo has come on to a major paper. He brings Kolchak in.
Yeah.
And brings him to meet the editor of the paper, played by?
I forgot.
John Carradine.
Oh, damn.
As Lucius Crossbinder.
God, I really got to see these again. I've seen the show more often than I've seen the movies.
They came out, MGM put out a disc. It's got both.
It's
a double disc. Again, a series of murders start, and you kind of know what's coming, but it's an interesting, I guess, villain is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, now let's talk about the villain.
Talk about the villain.
Mr. Richard Anderson, Oscar Goldman from The $6 Million Man, and a hell of a nice guy. He was at the Williamsburg Film Festival a few years ago, and I tell you, you couldn't. This guy's so a gentleman. I mean, that's the only way I can think to describe him. A classic, nice guy, and had a great time talking to him about just movies and acting and the craft of acting, and just fantastic. And I think he's going to be in the Williamsburg Film Festival this coming year.
Oh, that'd be great.
I think they're having him back. It's their 20th anniversary. Look up Williamsburg Classic Film Festival online for details on that, folks. Lots of cool old movie guests are going to be there. But that one's not free. And but Richard Anderson is the bad guy, the Night Strangler.
He is the Night Strangler, and you get a series of murders. They're finding the decaying flesh on the victims. But instead of a vampire, the villain is Dr. Malcolm Richards.
Mm-hmm.
Who has been alive, I'm not remembering exactly, but since the Civil War at this point in
time. Oh, okay.
And he is a doctor who has developed this serum to prolong aging, basically a serum immortality.
Yeah.
But every 80 years or whatever the cycle is, or so many years, he has to rejuvenate himself, and he has to get the chemical from a living victim.
Gotcha, okay.
So, and it's kind of one of those thin disguises where... It's also got an interesting setting. He's hiding in, apparently, there's a city under Seattle. It's a sunken city.
I remember that. I remember that part.
And that's his base of operations.
And like Joanne Flug, the girl sidekick in this one?
Yes.
She's
like a stripper.
And like psychology student or something like that.
And she's got a boat. Yeah, I remember she's on a boat. She lives on a boat. And Kolchak does his thing, and he finds out that Richard Malcolm was originally Dr. Malcolm Richards in the Civil War.
I see what he did there. Like, yeah.
That's the best. You had 80 years to think of this. Come on, put a little more effort into it.
You could just change it to John Smith, different name.
He shaved off his old Civil War beard, flipped the names and figures, who else is going to be around? So Kolchak again saves the day and stops him from getting his serum, and basically he collapses into dust. And there's a scene where you gradually see him age.
Yeah.
And at the end, you get a Dorian Gray thing where you see him in his final...
Oh.
And he just has this other great moment where he's looking at... And he's confused. He doesn't see himself as a bad guy. He sees himself as a scientist who's defeated death.
Yeah.
And he just looks at Kolchak. He's like, why? And, tampering in God's domain and all. And for some reason, whenever I watch that... Of course, it's a very different approach, but it thematically always makes me think of Fulci's House by the Cemetery, with Freudstein, the doctor, living in the basement and rejuvenating himself through victims and all.
Oh, okay.
I think that'd be an interesting double bill one night, because they're vastly different approaches. An ABC TV movie and a Fulci film. compare and contrast.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Not as successful as the first one.
Yeah. Now, how does this one end? Where does this leave us with Vincenzo and Kolchak at the end of this one?
I'm trying to remember. I think it's another of the same where Carradine wipes his hands of them and they basically get the rail. The thing about Kolchak and Vincenzo are kind of like Don Quixote and Sancho Panza. They're always tilting at windmills and they never win, but they never stop fighting.
Yeah.
And I can't remember everybody who's in this, but again, it's a bevy of 70 stars.
They're loaded, man. It was one episode we watched here recently. Everybody was somebody you knew. I mean, and names,
And names. Names you would know now.
Yeah. So they get run out of Seattle, and we end up...
Seattle.
The TV show, we're in Chicago.
We're in Chicago.
And Chicago is like... keeps them. They're like, come here, Kolchak. Get out of here.
And Vincenzo and Kolchak end up together again.
And Vincenzo, his character's changed slightly because he doesn't want to hear any of the supernatural stuff. He's like, Carl, just write the story. I don't want to hear about that crap.
It's almost like Kolchak takes it in stride, but Vincenzo says twice is enough for me. I'm not dealing with this anymore ever.
We're
done.
Just write about the baseball league. Write about the political candidate.
Write about whatever you want to that's not dead doctors and vampires.
Yeah. No, not werewolves either, Carl.
Not werewolves either. So we get we basically get to the monster of the week formula. And before we get into the meat of the episodes we watched, only lasted one season. I think,
which is
novelty,
a damn shame.
Well, I think the novelty kind of wore off.
Yeah.
And I picked up a book many, many years ago. The author's name is Mark DeWidziak or something similar to that.
Yeah.
It's called Night Stalking. It was a 20th anniversary.
Oh, cool.
It's like a coffee table book, sort of.
Yeah.
One of the oversized paperbacks.
Yeah.
It's a wealth of knowledge, and unfortunately, Richard Matheson, I believe, wrote the screenplays for the two TV movies.
Yeah.
Dan Curtis produced them.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe Kolchak also got in. Darren McGavin, who played Kolchak, got into the producing angle as well.
Oh.
Dan Curtis and Matheson were not involved in the TV series.
Yeah.
So two of the bigger creative elements were gone. And between, I think, the novelty of a monster every week kind of wearing off, but it was also not a very happy production.
Oh, yeah?
There was a lot of backstage stuff and all.
Oh,
and
that's a shame.
I think it said at the end when they did a wrap party for the series, nobody came.
Damn.
So it was kind of sad. It's one of those things that we have one season. The people who love it, love it. It's a gem. But it was what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Well, we got a season of gold, so.
We got a season of gold. The first episode was the Jack the Ripper kind of callback, which was good. Second episode was the vampire, which is one of the ones we're going.
which opens up with a vampire coming out of Vegas, a female vampire, but a vampire coming out of Vegas. And I think you'd said something earlier, which kind of ties to the first movie and kind of leads us to think, well, maybe, you know, he made some vampires while
exactly.
he was there.
Exactly. It's a nice kind of thematic tie-in.
Yeah.
And Kolchak scams, and the vampire, the killings start in Vegas, and one of Kolchak's old friends, who's now a TV reporter, played by Larry Storch.
The Larry Storch.
Tells him about a series of murders that started in Vegas and kind of worked west.
Yeah.
So Vincenzo sends Carl on a mission to talk about a young yogi who's doing transcendental meditation guru. So Carl schmoozes his way into that to go basically finish what he started.
Yeah.
And Kolchak is played by Darren McGavin. Great actor.
Oh, man. Played perfectly by Darren McGavin.
Perfect. It is. Kolchak is as much Darren McGavin as Columbo was Peter Falk.
Yeah. Yeah. You couldn't have anybody else do it.
For those of you who may have never seen Kolchak before, and I feel bad for
you. We can't be friends.
Again, you found this podcast somehow by mistake. If you want to know who Darren McGavin is, I know you've seen A Christmas Story. He's the old man.
The old man. The dad in Christmas Story is Kolchak the Night Stalker.
You will never watch that again if you didn't already know that.
And Kolchak is the greatest bullshit artist there ever was.
Oh, he's fantastic.
Get himself into anywhere and say he's anybody or anything and make people, and the double talk, and make people believe it. And
sheer force of will gets him into this stuff.
It's amazing. It's art to watch.
Now, imagine you have the dad from Christmas Story, and every week he wears the same thing.
The same exact suit. That
he's got this terrible beat up little straw hat.
And his blue and white pinstripe.
His seersucker matlock suit.
Yeah.
It's the matlock suit.
Pretty much. And white tennis shoes.
White that are beat to hell. They're grimy.
Yeah.
And his blue dress shirt and the knit black tie with the square bottom.
Yeah. And he carries that little tape recorder and that little Instamatic camera with the big flash bar
with the big flash bulb up top.
And he drives was a yellow Mustang convertible.
The yellow Mustang convertible.
That has seen better days.
That has seen better days. Trivia, at the end of it, they finally give a name last couple episodes. He calls it the Yellow Submarine.
Awesome.
So Kolchak finishes basically what he started.
Yeah.
He wraps up the first case and kind of brings it to an end.
Yeah. And that connects it to the movies loosely, sort of.
Exactly.
Without saying that that's what it does.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you hadn't seen the movies, you wouldn't know. Because it doesn't refer back to it, but it's enough if you have. It's like,
It's a nice little acknowledgement. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing about this show is if you happen to catch it on TV, you don't have to worry about watching it out of order.
There's
arc. It's not
sequential at all.
It's not a mythology at all. Towards the end of the series, maybe to kind of shake it up, they started introducing some running characters, but it's nothing that carries over.
Yeah, there's no continuity as far as, hey, you remember when we did this last time? No, it's nothing like that. You just know that they know each other because the way they talk to
exactly.
each other. That's it.
And it's a great little family of characters as
well.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Great little family of characters.
The other reporters there that you see in little bits and pieces, and then some of the street people that he runs into occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
That you never see again, but you know that he knows them.
But you know that he knows them.
Yeah. Now let's talk about some of the episodes. The Monsters of the Week.
The Monsters of the Week.
And some of our favorites.
Some of our favorites.
Of course, mine is the episode I remember the most from when it originally aired when I was a little kid, or probably, I guess, watching it reruns, really,
mm-hmm.
Was The Werewolf on the Cruise Ship.
Yes.
Not The Love Boat.
No, not The Love Boat at all.
But it was a love boat. It was a swingers cruise.
And who did Kolchak room with?
Dick Gaudier. The immortal Dick Gaudier.
And when the werewolf showed up, things were rotten.
Yes, they were. But man, in this episode, you had Dick Gaudier, Henry Jones, Bob Hastings, and Eric Braeden. Eric Braeden, late from Escape from Planet of the Apes, playing the werewolf.
And Nita Talbot.
Oh, yeah, Nita Talbot, who was in a ton of stuff on the 70s, every TV show.
You'll know, she was like the 70s version of Peg Bundy, is the way I think of
that's
her.
That's who she looks and sounds like.
And
attractive, though.
And another little kind of side thing, her character in Kolchak's actually, they had really good chemistry together.
Yeah, She should have been a reoccurring character.
She should have. I think that would have been interesting for that to go some places.
As a not girlfriend, you know.
The not girlfriend girlfriend. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
That would have been kind of cool. Mm-hmm. It's another, you know, same formula. Every episode just about is, it starts out with a voiceover and Carl either talking into his tape recorder or listening to what he just said,
mm-hmm.
and then continuing to record, and the rest of the episode's flashback from what happened. And it's great. You got that framing bit, because at the end, then you get another voiceover of the closing of the story or the case. And you can count on that every episode to it starting and ending like that. And it's almost documentary-like.
Very Joe Friday, because you tell the date and the time, and September 24th, 9:20 p.m., little Sally Muckinfutch was walking home, and then he just breaks into and tells you what terrible fate befell this person.
Yeah, and those bookend sequences, and even some of the way it's shot, you've got some handheld shooting,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then you got some static, you know, set up shots. But it almost gives, some of it gives a little documentary kind of feel, like you're, you know, going right there with the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it's, you got a little film noir sometimes with you know, the dark shadows and the angles and all, and then the tight close-ups. It was a well-done series that I think it was better than that it had any right to be, as far as the way it was shot and the way mm-hmm. it was done in the scripts.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun show that a lot of people like, but I don't think it gets the credit that it deserves. Uh-huh. I'm mm-hmm. not saying it was revolutionary by any stretch, but it was definitely, I think, ahead of itself.
True. Sure.
You know, for whatever everything else that was going on there.
And I was thinking, and we're going to get back to the werewolf in a second, folks, I promise, but we watched 5 episodes to talk about tonight.
Yeah.
And the show only ran for like 16. So we watched about a third of the show tonight to prepare for the podcast.
Yeah, picking and choosing certain episodes.
So it's Christmas time in Chicago, almost like a Die Hard movie. And Vincenzo's getting ready to go on vacation, but he gets hamstrung at the last minute. The big boys in the office want to come in for an audit. So he ends up sending Kolchak on this cruise on a ship called the Hanover.
Yeah.
Which is about to be decommissioned. It's been turned into a swingers club. So he sends Carl
to report on the activities.
The activities, you know, some nostalgia pieces on the history of the ship, so on and so forth. And there's a werewolf.
Yeah. And I love how Carl is always totally oblivious to everything that's going on. Or he knows that it's there, but it's a bother. It's too busy. He's too busy. Like in the swingers cruise,
mm-hmm.
everybody's, hey, let's party. He's like, yeah, I just got it. Let me set my bags down. I got to do this. But, you know, he's like in his own little world of what he has to do, and he knows you're doing it, but you're bugging me right now.
Exactly.
And when he goes to in the other episode, on the vampire episode,
mm-hmm.
he's coming and setting up, and he has a report. Vincenzo keeps calling him about reporting on the guru thing, and he's got this girl to ghostwrite the story for him, and she's like, when do you want to proofread it? I'll do it later. Boom, he's got to investigate the vampire thing, you know.
And Tony's pushing him for the details on the yogi, yeah. and he's covering the phone with a towel and turning on his electric razor. Tony, I can't hear you. What? Oh, goodbye, click. So he's always getting the runaround. And so the werewolf shows up, the cleanest werewolf I think ever, because he just throws people over the balcony.
Yeah, it's not Paul Naschy by any means. He's not ripping throats out. But we're always told
that he is. Yeah. Apparently the victims are in a state of just mauled disarray and torn to shreds.
But he does that 70s Wonder Woman throwing the bad guy over across the room thing. That's all he does. And the makeup for the werewolf is horrible. It looks more like a teddy bear with lips.
it looks like the brown version of Werewolf of Washington in some way. Yeah.
But, you know, it doesn't bother you because it's Kolchak and the show's good.
Exactly.
And not really a whole lot more to say about them. I don't want to go through, you know, and give play-by-play of the entire episode because you watch it.
Yeah, it's fun.
But it's fun. And the same thing, you know, it ends with them talking into the recorder. What was the other one we watched? The next one we watched?
Oh, after that we watched Devil's Platform.
Oh, yeah, with Tom Skerritt.
With Tom Skerritt.
Playing the senator who is a Satanist.
The devil-worshipping senator.
The devil-worshipping senator who has an amulet that he can turn himself into a dog, a hellhound.
A Rottweiler.
Yeah.
The good boy.
And this one, he's getting revenge on the people who've kind of hindered him in his climb to the top or helped him but has evidence against him.
Mm-hmm. He's basically an amoral hack.
Yeah.
And through some... And the exposition isn't clunky like it is in some, you know...
Yeah.
Well, Professor Smith, who did this experiment in the law a long time ago that resulted... It's not like that at all.
But you get most of it in the voiceover at the beginning.
You get most of it in the voiceover at the beginning.
Kolchak is telling you, this guy worked for him and such until he went on his boat. And then, boom, the boat blows up.
The boat blows up. So, basically, Tom Skerritt is... getting revenge on those who have wronged him and has basically sold his soul for political power.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
getting rid of all the opposition.
Sound familiar, folks?
Move on to bigger and bigger. And I was actually going to touch on that because when we were selecting episodes, you said it's a great episode from the 70s because, you know, Devil's Reign, Exorcist.
Oh, yeah. Lots of satanic movies in the 70s.
But also, what else was going on around the time this came out?
Oh, yeah.
This is the time of Watergate, and we had just come out of Vietnam.
Yeah.
So the whole political, all the president's men and stuff, and that aspect was also going on.
So it was
on.
Very lightly touching on that aspect.
It was,
actually
a great marriage.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Of those two concepts.
It was. And Skerritt's a great actor. You know, he plays very subtle in this, in his menace.
Yeah, very, you know? Very subtle. Very
He's not
subtle.
Over the top. And I love the part where Kolchak has broken into his basement where he has his altar and his, you know, his all his devil worship and stuff. And he comes down there, puts Skerritt comes down there, puts his robe on and does his chant to summon, you know, the curse or the devil or whatever. And then he's done doing that and he walks around the table. He's got this blade and he says, "All right, Mr. Kolchak, you can come out now." Like, he knew he was there the whole time. And he's just, "Yeah, you can come out now. Whatever." And Kolchak mm-hmm. comes out, and they have a little conversation. And
and poor, again, old, long-suffering Vincenzo is like, "Just cover the election. Leave me alone with devil dogs and everything. I know. Just cover the story."
Some of these some episodes are better than others, but they're pretty even, though, as far as enjoyability. You know, none of them are really slow.
Yeah.
I can't say there's one that I wouldn't sit down and watch or mm-hmm. fast forward over if I'm watching them all in a row.
Yeah.
You know, there's mm-hmm. in almost every series, there are some that you're like, "Oh, this one. Well, I can do without seeing this one right now." You know?
Yeah. And also, we picked some of our favorites tonight, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Some of the ones that stood out for one reason or another. What was the next one we watched?
One we watched was Chopper.
Whose favorite is that?
Which is my personal favorite. And let's step back in the Wayback Machine for this one.
All right.
Let me ask you, how did you first come into knowing about Kolchak?
God, I don't remember. It could have been Famous Monsters magazine. Mm-hmm. It could have been my cousins, Brad and Gary. They used to go visit in Carolina, mm-hmm. and they had the Aurora models. They had Famous Monsters, and we watched Creature Feature down there. And I kind of got into some of that stuff through them.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could have been just it was on TV. Mm-hmm. And my mom, you know, she liked mystery stories and stuff and supernatural stuff. And so we could have just started watching it. I don't remember exactly the first time, mm-hmm. you know, but I just remember kind of always knowing about Kolchak.
Are you ready? Are you
I'm
sitting
ready.
Down and holding
I'm sitting
on?
Down, holding on tight.
I had the cool mom that let me stay up late.
Oh, yeah.
No. Love you, Mom. Friday night,
yeah.
The CBS late movie at 11 o'clock. Do you remember the CBS late movie?
Oh, yeah,
I remember Letterman would always fuss. He goes, "It's not a movie. It's just old TV show. Stop calling it a movie."
Watched many McMillan and Wife episodes in Columbo.
Columbo. That's where I came across Columbo. But I distinctly remember Chopper being the first episode that stuck in my mind.
Oh, yeah.
Chopper is basically a retelling of the Headless Horseman.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Through 50s motorcycle gangs.
who are older in the 70s now.
Who are older in the 70s now. So, I actually kind of wonder if maybe this is played into something where they got Poltergeist from.
Yeah.
Because the trouble starts when a developer buys...
Oh, yeah.
The cemetery, and they have to move all the bodies. Well, the body of the headless motorcyclist gets disturbed, and the head gets separated.
Yeah.
apparently years ago it was two rival motorcycle gangs, the Jokers and the Bishops, and one gang set a trap for the other guy. Accidentally, yeah, okay. He gets decapitated. Yeah. Uh-huh. And the one guy kind of kept the head as a trophy. And
Like you do.
Back then, the headless motorcyclist comes around. The leader of the other gang figures this out, puts the head with the body. No more trouble.
Yeah.
Until the bodies get moved and the head falls out of the coffin that gets broken.
Yeah.
Headless motorcyclist comes back.
With a sword.
With a samurai sword. Because
that's what you do.
That's what you do. And the thing I love about it, and even though this came from the most popular TV movie of all time up to that point.
Yeah.
And was well regarded. The show itself didn't have a great budget.
Oh, no.
So the concept of Chopper is an awesome concept, but in execution... You can look at it and basically tell it's a regular guy on a motorcycle, but they've built the shoulders up over his head.
It's like a Halloween parade and so.
Yes. Basically, if this guy got off the motorcycle and stood up, he'd be about 11 feet tall. And he's got like a little dowel rod stump of a neck sticking out of the top.
And his arms only move from the elbows.
But the guy can handle a bike.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And my older brother is a motorcycle enthusiast, been that way my whole life. So yeah. I think that's maybe why that episode stuck out with me.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, I mean, even if not, headless guy on a motorcycle with a samurai sword.
I'm in.
That makes an impression.
Yeah.
And again, who do we have in this episode?
Oh, God, we've got...
We have Art Matrano, Captain Mauser himself from Police Academy.
We got Jay Robinson.
We got Jay Robinson.
Dr. Shrinker.
We got...
Who else do we have?
Larry Linville.
Oh, Larry Linville was the police captain. Yeah, oh, jeez. Yeah.
And then, was it Sharon Farrell as the wife?
Crazy Sharon, yes. Yes, it was. Oh, you had to be there. Or be glad that you weren't. I don't know. But yeah, you know, it was a good episode. It was fun. Mm-hmm. Like you said, the cheese factor of the way the biker looked didn't take you out of the enjoyment of the episode.
Not at all. You totally buy into it.
You know.
And there's a scene where Kolchak has figured out what's going on.
Yeah.
He's figured out how to stop the menace. So he's in the warehouse where they have all the coffins stored. He's looking for the coffin so he can reunite it with the head. The motorcyclist shows up.
Yeah.
Because now Kolchak's sniffing around.
Because he's got the head.
And there's a genuine sense of menace.
Uh-huh.
That's another thing I liked about this show. It was scary.
Oh, yeah.
There are moments in this show, in each episode, that are truly scary.
Well, it was shot well. It was the camera work, a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the shots were, and there was none of that shaky cam, none of the quick moving. You saw what was coming, or it was shot that you didn't see, but you knew it was there. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's art, man. I mean, you know, that's good filmmaking right there. When they do the shaky cam and moving it real fast, it's because they don't know how to shoot a scene to achieve the effect. I don't care what anybody says. Oh, it puts you in the action. It makes it realistic. Bullshit.
It gives me a headache.
It gives you a headache, and you can't see what's being shot.
It's
a crutch.
Why they have all these guys go through all this fight training, because the way they edit it, you could just flail your arms and get the same impression.
Oh, yeah.
You can't see what's going on.
But not in Kolchak.
No. You can see what's going on, and it's a genuine sense of menace. You feel like this could be the last episode, folks.
Yeah, that's true.
And then you see Vincenzo trucking around trying to fight the slime monster or whatever next week.
Now, what was the next episode we watched?
The next episode we watched was the last one. It's called Horror in the Heights.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
With Phil Silver.
Phil Silvers.
I don't think there was any other big names that would jump out at you.
No, but there's some character actor faces you would recognize. Yeah, but no names, really.
Mm-hmm. This is another aspect of the Kolchak mythos that I think is great.
Yeah.
Is you had your vampires, you had your zombies, you had your werewolves.
Yeah. But you get other mythology from other cultures.
This episode deals with a monster from Indian mythology called the Rakshasa.
Yeah.
And what the Rakshasa does, it's a demon that can... It will go into your mind, and you will see the person you trust
most. It will appear to you as the person you trust the most.
So it can approach you, and then it eats
your face off.
It eats your face off.
Yeah.
So Kolchak, is fighting this, And there's kind of a twist in it because it takes place in Roosevelt Heights. I don't know if that's a real neighborhood in Chicago or not.
I don't know.
At the time this was filmed, it was heavily a Jewish neighborhood.
Yeah.
And a gentleman opens up an Indian restaurant.
Or had opened up before the show started. Has been
restaurant.
There.
Unbeknownst to most people at the time, an Indian good luck symbol is the swastika.
Yeah, long before it was used by the Nazis.
So you have all
years
these
and years,
terrible,
like ancient good luck symbol.
So you have these terrible crimes being committed in this Jewish neighborhood. The Jewish residents are unsure because they see this Indian man putting up a swastika.
But, you know, they don't say anything about the swastika, I don't think.
No, Phil Silver does. When he takes Kolchak to the back of the restaurant,
oh,
he's
okay.
like, see, I told you.
Oh, that's right, he
this
does.
This is
he
the
does.
Guy that killed my friend.
That's right, that's right, that's right.
But it turns out that the Indian gentleman is actually basically Patel Winchester, I guess you could call him, because he hunts Rakshasa.
Yeah.
In the episode, he says he's been doing it for 60 years. Wherever one springs up, he opens a restaurant and fights it and then moves on to the next town.
Yeah.
So this one has a nice little twist at the end. I'm not going to spoil for you because Kolchak believes he's safe because he's so cynical.
Yeah, well, the guy's,
there's nobody.
Yeah. Well, that's in the line, the way he says the line, it's like, ooh, Carl's getting serious.
Yeah.
Because the whole show, he's like, hey, you know, he's serious, but he's taking it kind of light. And the guy says, be careful because it'll appear to you as, you know, whoever you trust the most. He goes, well, there's a twist there, Pops. I don't trust anybody. And he's deadly
and
serious.
And he's serious. He's
yeah,
very
and you're
serious.
Like, ooh, Carl's going to win. I mean, you know he's going
to
win anyway.
And there's a neat little twist to it that, you know, of course, we're not going to spoil here, but yeah. It's definitely worth watching.
Yeah.
Over the course of these five episodes, and each, if you've seen one episode, aside from the Monster of the Week, you've basically seen them all. It's
kind of
formulaic, but you definitely
get
the themes.
It's great to see who shows up, the actors, and what the monster is going to be.
What the monster is going to be.
Because, you know, like
how
we said,
he's going to fight it.
Yeah. Because like we said, it's you get the basic monsters everybody knows, a vampire, a werewolf, zombie. But then you get the different culture myth monsters.
Mm-hmm. Like the, you know. There's one, Spanish Moss Murders.
Yeah.
He fights Primo Fey, which is basically a, there's a Cajun, I believe he's a musician, and he goes in for a sleep experiment where he's put in basically into a deep coma. And a myth he heard as a little boy, I believe, about it's basically a Cajun swamp monster.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Freddy Krueger. It comes out of his dream and becomes real.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple episodes with...
Maybe that's where they got the idea from.
I'm not saying.
I'm just saying.
I mean, you get Native American cursed medicine men. You get Eric Estrada trying to resurrect an Aztec god.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about Eric Estrada.
You get...
Well, and then they try, you know, they had the one episode where they're trying to be current or you know, up to date on, you know, the next menace, artificial intelligence.
Mr. Ring,
the episode where they're trying to, you know, create a computer intelligence that's the bad guy.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
And you'll get this, and hopefully some of our audience will.
Oh, Jesus.
Whenever I watch Mr. Ring, I always kind of think of Mr. Gordon's.
Yep.
You knew exactly where I was going with that. If you don't know, Google Mr. Gordon's, and we've just opened up a whole new world to you.
Oh, my goodness.
You're welcome.
That's a whole nother podcast right there.
Yeah, that is going to be another podcast, by the way.
Oh, is it now?
Oh, it is. But thematically, in addition to Kolchak never... And these stories, where to begin? Thematically.
Yeah.
The story he's writing never, ever sees the light of day.
Not once the true story
get published.
Uh-uh.
Second of all, every police captain in Chicago hates Kolchak.
That's true.
And I got to wonder, it's like there's a new captain every episode. I'm like, is he driving these guys to retirement or insanity or to death?
Or is this, well, he's just going to a different borough, a different town.
Borough.
You know. My favorite, though, I think, was the... Was he in Vegas or was it outside of Vegas? William Daniels. That was the vampire.
That was the vampire one.
Okay. William Daniels is, most people probably recognize as he was the voice of Kit.
That's what
from Knight Rider, but he was also John Adams in 1776.
And for you serious minded folk, he was one of the doctors on St. Elsewhere.
Yeah. And also Captain Nice, I think. How's that for you?
I don't even know who that is.
Look it up. But
right after they look up Mr. Gordon's.
But William Daniels is a great actor, underrated, I think. But his portrayal as this police captain who's just tired of everybody and everything and doesn't want to deal with any bullshit. And he's just serious about, you know, you'd be on a plane by 6 o'clock in the morning. Or
and the thing I love about it is, for the Chicago stories, the police captains, they know Kolchak, they're sick of him, they don't like him. The vampire one, Kolchak goes to California. He just meets William Daniels, and in 5 minutes, William Daniels hates him. He's ready to run him out of rail. In like 20 minutes, he wants Kolchak out of his state.
It's not like Kolchak's an asshole, but he just wants to get a story.
He just wants to get the story.
He asks a question. He asks questions they don't want to answer, and they're, you know, they're always like, "How do you know that?" And I love the one with Larry Linville. He gets Linville to tell him everything, and he says, "I'm not going to tell you anything." And Kolchak says, "What about this?" And then he starts talking about something else. And then while he's talking about something else, Linville's just spewing out all this information.
It's just so smooth.
And
Kolchak
says, "Oh, really? You know a lot." And he's just writing it all down, like, "Thank you for telling me."
And he just totally works him.
For being just a, you know, this unkept schlub, he is a smooth operator throughout the show.
He really is. Well, what he is, he's a reporter.
He is.
He's a reporter.
Classic old school reporter.
And it's, and I love that bit when Vincenzo describes him as being off a road trip production of the front page, because that is exactly what Carl Kolchak is.
He is.
I imagine in maybe 20 years when he was a Cub reporter, he had that thing in his hat pin that said press and with the big kind of poof cameras.
He wasn't Carl Kolchak. He was Scoop Kolchak back then.
Scoop Kolchak. Superman's pal, Carl Kolchak. So those are the five we watched, but I mean, they're
how many
they're
total
fantastic.
Were in the season?
16.
16.
They did 16 episodes.
Yeah, you can get there's a box set of three disc DVDs. I think it's still in print, as far as I know.
As far as I know.
Yeah. I don't know if it's on Netflix or anything right now.
I think it is, actually.
Is it?
I think it is.
Oh, well, hey, you have no excuse. Check them out. Watch them. It's great to put in any time, but especially late at night. Throw one in. They're, what, about 40 minutes long? It was an hour show.
Yeah, something like that.
They move at a good clip. I mean, we watched five, and it was like boom, 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 like nothing. Mm-hmm. It went by fast, and they're a lot of fun. And they're not intense, but when the scenes come up, there's you know,
yeah,
real menace.
Like, if you have kids, if you're a horror fan and you have kids that are kind of starting to get into it, I think these are appropriate for something you could watch with your kids.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's nothing gory.
No, it's nothing.
And it's, you know, it's not like TV now. There's definitely a sense of drama and dread in the scenes where something's going to happen, but it's not going to give you nightmares or anything like that. But, you know, no way. But it's just a good, solid, well-done show. And definitely a product of its time, of the 70s.
But what I think is interesting is, like, I mentioned that book earlier.
Oh, yeah.
The reason I was so excited to find that book, because for years, you know, I've started watching it like 85, 86 on the CBS late movie or whatever the case was. None of my friends stayed up or watched that, so yeah. I would always talk about this weird little show, and no one had any idea what I was talking about. And I found that book, and it's almost like, you see the leprechaun too? It's right here. I have proof. I finally got it on camera. So
that was one I've just always remembered, always known, and loved Kolchak since I was a kid. Now, here's one, and I've only met a very few people that I remember seeing, probably CBS late movie, when I was a kid, and it had to be in the late 70s, okay, because I was real, real young. But my mom was the same. She'd let me stay up and watch this stuff as long as I got up in the morning and went to school. Do you remember one called The Snoop Sisters?
The name rings a bell, but I don't know.
It was
know
two
much else
old
late
Helen Hayes, I believe, and I can't remember who the other lady was off the top of my head. But the only one I remember was these sweet old ladies. They would solve mysteries like this, okay? But these sweet old ladies sitting in a bar, and Alice Cooper was playing.
Oh, my.
And he's in a skeleton-like jumpsuit, and he's got the makeup, and he comes down on the table and starts talking to them after a song or in the middle of the song, and it has something to do with the mystery they're going after. But then, you know, there was a lot of genre-type TV stuff in the 70s like this.
There was.
And then it went away in for a few years, and then there's a little bit of a revival in the 80s, and then it blew up in the 90s.
Well, I remember in the mid-90s, right after I first moved to Virginia, we were watching something on Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah.
And I got all excited because they were releasing Kolchak the Night Stalker on VHS. It was two episodes per tape.
Uh-huh.
And I was all excited. I'm like, yeah, finally, I'm going to have my... And I got like the first two tapes and lent them to somebody and never saw them again.
I saw all of them at a thrift store like a year ago. And I was like, I got the DVDs.
That's right. Yeah. But it was exciting. So I'm like, yeah, this is kind of, you know...
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, just kind of out of nowhere, it's like... Almost like people started remembering it.
Yeah.
Because then the next kind of big callback you get is in the X-Files.
Uh-huh.
Where Scully and Mulder... I was never that big into X-Files. Yeah, it would come either. In waves with me. But there was an episode where they had to go back and research one of the first X-Files cases. And they had to go speak with the agent that worked it. So they go see this FBI agent, long retired... The first agent assigned to the X-Files, played by Darren McGavin.
Of course, it was
definitely a tip of the hat.
Yeah.
If you had never seen Kolchak or heard of it, like, hey, oh, cool. This is, you get the whole element of, oh, the X-Files has been around for a while.
This is the guy that came before them.
But if you watch Kolchak,
you knew
there was a special kind of something happening in that episode.
Now, the shame of it, though, of that is. That they wanted McGavin to play Kolchak.
Which would have been
I would own that box set of
that
season of X-Files just for those two episodes. But I've heard a couple of different things about that. One, that they couldn't get the rights to the character for some reason. But I've also heard that McGavin wouldn't play Kolchak again. So I don't know what's true or not, but it's a damn missed opportunity.
It would have been an
amazing moment in TV history, personally, anyway.
True. Oh, no doubt. And then after that, I think, was it Topps license, and he started doing the comic books and...
Yeah.
And then...
Which I've yet to check out.
Yeah, I haven't come across any of them either, unfortunately. And then they were having new stories, and I think there were a couple...
Moonstone
started.
And they released some prose books?
Yeah. Yeah.
Stories?
Topps had it first, I think.
Oh,
and
did they?
So, yeah, there's been a couple of different ones of Kolchak comics, and then they had some prose books I haven't gotten all. And and then after that, of course, you get up into the Supernaturals, or Supernatural.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I've started watching. It's an enjoyable series, but to me it's like Kolchak's grandson to me. I cannot separate Supernatural from Kolchak, and I was watching it with the lovely Phyllis Floyd one night.
Yeah.
And the little thing at the end of Supernatural, it's a typewritten font. I'm like, that's the end credits of Kolchak. That's exactly, I see what they did there. And that made me love the show a little bit more.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, and, you know, it could be a nod and a wink, you know, because all these shows, were, like I said, you talk to the creators, and they've all... were influenced a little bit by Kolchak. Another thing we didn't touch on, though, is one of my favorite parts of the show is the opening credits.
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic.
Because it comes in, you almost think it's a sitcom. It's Kolchak walking in by himself. It's like, you think it's early in the morning, but could be late in the evening.
Because
it's still light, and he's the only one coming off. He's whistling this tune, you know, and it's light, and he throws his hat, and it misses the...
And totally missing. The hat just falls to the floor.
He doesn't even notice, and he sits down and starts typing, and it shows the fan on, it shows the clock, and he's typing, you know, da-da-da-da. And then all of a sudden, it starts to get a little dimmer, and the music changes from the da-da-da-da-da, you know, goes darker.
You're getting the bass notes in there.
And the fan stops, and the clock stops, and it cuts back to him, and he cuts his eyes, and then he cuts his eyes again, and then that's it. But it's great. The music is great, the way it switches, and that whole opening is short. But man, it just sets the tone for the whole show.
And it's a memorable song. If you know the show.
Oh, yeah. You know the
every
song.
Every time you hear that song from now on, it just, you flash right to it.
But it sets the tone for the whole show because it is a light show, but it has really serious moments. But it's not a comedy, like I said before. But there are bits, the dialogue interchange between some of the characters, funny as hell.
Funny as
hell. Great writing. Great writing.
There was another little callback that, that meant a lot to me. It didn't mean, too much until I point out to some friends who are like, yeah, okay, sure, whatever. when I was in my RPG phase, we played GURPS because that was, you know, interchangeable, had rules for every system. It had basic rules. You could plug it into any genre you wanted to.
Okay.
And they had a horror module. And you're flipping through, and it's different artists doing different things, and they had, like, movie posters, this and that. Well, in one of the pages, I'm flipping, and you see a big furry-clawed monster bear-looking thing coming at a guy, and the guy's kind of leaning back, and he's got a camera, and he's taking a picture, and he's in this little pinstripe suit with a black tie and a hat. And I'm like, that's Kolchak! And my buddy's like, it's a what? So I kind of tried to explain to him and got to kind of... Okay.
Oh, I'll tell you one. One of the first years we went to Dragon Con many years ago in early 2000s, I think. We went for about 6 years in a row. Mm-hmm. It was our vacation every year. One of the first years we went, you know, there was tons of people in costume all over the place. And we're taking pictures left and right. And everybody else is taking pictures of people in costume left and right. And all of a sudden, I see something across a room. And I don't know... I think it was Big Lee was there with us, and we both went running after this guy, or I just went running. I saw across the room a guy in a straw hat.
And that's all you really need to say.
And a seersucker suit.
That's all you need to say.
And a little camera. And I said, Kolchak, can I get a picture of you? He turned around like, he was so happy that somebody recognized it. I'm like, dude, best costume I've seen, you know, this whole weekend.
Mm-hmm. In that tribute book that I picked up, there's a great story in the beginning. The guy who wrote it, you know, obviously a huge Night Stalker. I think he also did a similar type book for Columbo. I think he also did a book for the Columbo series.
Oh, that's cool.
He said he was working in a newsroom, and he walks by the newsroom, and the reporter and the editor are just into it. And he said the reporter is like, he goes, this is a newspaper. You're supposed to print the news. You can't bury these stories. And he said he just stops, and he looks in the office, and in the middle of this fight, he just looks at this guy and goes, you're doing Kolchak. And he said for a minute, he thought the guy was going to turn around and just murder him. You know, get out of my bed. He said the guy turns around and has this huge smile. He goes, I always loved that speech that he gave to Vincenzo. So there was a real-life reporter. He was really doing Kolchak and Vincenzo getting into it.
Oh, that's awesome.
But unfortunately, there is a dark spot on the history of Kolchak. Mm. There's a dark spot. I don't remember how many years ago this was, but Sci-Fi tried to bring back the Night Stalker.
Less said about that, the better.
I never watched it.
I couldn't. It's the same.
I refused to watch it.
No. I didn't watch it at all, but just looking at the trailers for it, the previews, it bore no resemblance whatsoever.
And I don't know why
Let's use the name Night Stalker.
I don't know why this irked me so bad, but I saw a commercial for it.
Uh-huh.
And it's some young slick, and it's a name you would know. He was, I don't know it offhand, but it was kind of like a medium star playing Kolchak. Yeah. Younger guy, you know, conventionally modelly, good look. No. But what irked me is he pulls up and he's in a yellow Mustang. No, you're not allowed to do that. You get out of that car. You can't do that.
You got to be curmudgeonly and have a messed up seersucker suit and a straw hat. You can't be a young, slick guy with great hair and dressed to the nines. No.
And apparently they tried to do a tribute, they say, in the first episode when he's walking in. They digitized McGavin's Kolchak. And I said,
why?
If I see that, I will punch my TV.
Yeah, why? Why? I mean, they could have done the same show. It's cheap cashing in on the name. They could have done the same show that they did, called it something else.
And maybe it would have worked.
And have people go, oh, that's kind of like the Night Stalker used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it might have worked. I might have even watched it. Probably not. Because this glut of genre shows that are out now.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a few standouts that are okay and interesting. Supernatural's one of them that's just really good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost like they're cookie cutter. The faces are interchangeable. You know, a lot of these shows is almost like the same show just in a different city.
Yeah.
Or here they're cops, here they're scientists, but it's the same thing going on. And I guess you can say that about a lot of things on TV over the years, but this is just like a glut of like, how about this one? How about this one? Well, how about this one? Well, how about this one? You know, and it's all young, hip, pretty faces.
Some are going to be better than others. The ones that are better will stick around, and the ones that aren't won't.
Yeah.
Fine. You roll the dice and take your chances, but there's some things you just don't do.
No, and the caliber of actor that Darren McGavin was, there's not that many people on TV.
Oh, you know, true.
They have the chops or, you know, have the history.
And you know, we made this point a little while ago. That's almost like making Columbo now and having somebody come out and like Robert Pattinson, you know, comes in a $400 suit and he's supposed to be Columbo.
Yeah.
No. There's one Columbo.
There's only one Columbo.
There's one Kolchak. And to be honest, like they had in that new Night Stalker show, they had the editor. They named him Tony Vincenzo. He was a tall, thin, dapper guy, grayish hair, mustache. No. Tony's a big, portly,
burly,
rotund, Italian
ex-dock worker union guy.
Yes,
Italian.
Yes. Don't. No. He looked like. The new Vincenzo almost looked like they got the Monopoly guy to try to play J. Jonah Jameson. That's what it looked like to me. The Monopoly guy doing a really bad J. Jonah Jameson.
That's awful. No.
And Kolchak had this young, sexy black girl sidekick with. If there's anything more than anything else, Kolchak does not have a sidekick.
Here's something I got to bring up. We're talking about all the shows that are on now. Everybody's got either a sidekick or a team of people around them, mainly for exposition, or to help them do their job, you know, help them get whatever they've got to get done.
Yeah.
Done. And a few of the shows I watch and enjoy. The Flash is fun. It's a fun show. But he's got this whole team of people around him that know his identity and that he can't do what he does without these people around him helping him. And the new Night Stalker show, which was god-awful, let's reiterate that again, same thing. He had this girl sidekick with him.
Yes.
Now, if she was just an occasional, like we said in the original show, if this other character would pop up occasionally because they had good chemistry, that would be cool. But Kolchak, it was just McGavin.
Yeah.
It was just the one dude doing his job the whole time and trying to figure out how to do it as far as killing the monsters. He had to do the research and find it out and get help or read the books or whatever. But it was just the one guy carrying the weight of this thing the whole time. He didn't need anybody else. How come they can't figure that out, how to do that now?
And he wasn't like the guy, like, you know, he wasn't out of the army and became a reporter and, you know, carrying all this special gear. He would stumble. He would fall. He was klutzy trying to hold all his... He was
a klutz.
A real human being.
It was a real dude who found a way to make it work.
Yeah.
You know, through force of will, determination, and being the good guy.
Yeah. And the other thing that's amazing, it's a really good point now that I've rewatched some of the episodes that they brought up in that book.
Yeah.
And you'll never see an action hero do this now. Sometimes he would get scared and run away.
Oh.
Because that's what a real person would do.
Yeah, he did that a lot. I think you brought it up. We were talking earlier about his dress, his outfit. You know, he wears the suit, but he wears sneakers. And somebody asked him about the sneakers, and he said...
Yeah, he said, I run a lot. And the thing that I love about when he runs, he's always holding his hat to make sure he doesn't lose it. In one episode, Miss Emily, this little older lady works at the paper... Brings him this new hat from her trip to Italy, and it's this kind of dashing caballero looking.
It's like almost an oversized white fedora.
Yeah,
more of a dress hat, if anything, I guess.
Yeah, and it's a good looking hat. But the minute he leaves, he peeks out to see if Miss Emily's there, and back to that. I believe Vincenzo calls it his terrible little bird feeder hat. And a great line. Kolchak says, what is it you don't like about this hat? And Vincenzo says, what's under it?
Yeah.
Which is such a fantastic line. Such a great line.
Yeah, you know, and it's a great show. I can't reiterate enough how much, how good the show is, how much I enjoy watching it. And time will go by, and I might not watch any episodes for months, maybe the better part of a year, and I'll throw one on and throw two or three on in a row, you know? And it all comes back as how much fun it is. I urge everybody out there, if you've never seen an episode, hop on Netflix right now and watch one. You know, especially if you like stuff like Supernatural and The X-Files, and you want to see where it came from, check out Karl Kolchak.
I mean, with that question, it's a very special show.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody that has seen it and not liked it.
And especially if you... are a big fan, like I am, go figure, of the 70s and, you know, grindhouse films, horror films, or just any culture pop culture stuff from the 70s, there's no doubt when this was set and when it was made. Mm-hmm. It's got that feel to it, but it is unique to all the other shows and things that were out there in the pacing and the way it's shot. And like I said, mm-hmm. go out, watch it now when, you know, when you turn this off, watch an episode.
And then Google Mr. Gordon's so you know what we're talking Gordon, about.
Yeah. Well, I think that's about all I got. How about you?
Again, it would just be, to praise this show, you're just going to say the same thing over and over.
Yes,
it's
indeed.
It's just a fun little show. Yeah. It's endearing. It's kind of like the little show that could. And you feel real special when, A, you can meet someone who's never seen it before and tell them about it and watch them discover it for the first time.
Because it's like I said, it's shot. It's more like a little movie and not a TV show in the way it's shot.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't resemble other TV shows that were being made at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. In closing.
Carl, you're one hell of a reporter.
That's right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.